There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Monday. Good to have you here. Remember, text line open at 343-0106, and you can drop us a line there on my Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5 or Facebook page as well. Hey, speaking of the Twitter feed, I just put this story up that I found last week, and I read through it with great interest last week. Been holding on to it, and real lucky to get Professor Craig Colton from LSU, professor of geography from LSU. And no, somebody on email said, y'all talking about LSU football? No, we're talking with somebody from LSU. Professor Craig Colton joins us to talk about his piece, Rivers Flood Regularly During Hurricanes, But Get Less Attention Than Coastlines. Dr. Colton, thanks for your time.
Pleasure to be here.
This is interesting because we're talking about this here in the aftermath of Hurricane Florence. When you wrote this, you said now a tropical depression, but now Florence long gone, but the flooding effects still hitting the Carolinas, still deliveries being made by your folks there from the Cajun Navy working up in the Carolinas. There's still people's homes that are just now have gotten the highest water of the flood in the last 2 days. This is an ongoing, this is more of a chronic situation from Florence than it was from the actual landfall.
Yes, and this is one of the things that we often forget, and it is not at all that is not at all uncommon. We have massive preparation on the coastline for the barrier islands and the immediate coastal areas, and we do things really well for that. And that really stems from a series of big hurricanes that hit the eastern seaboard back in the 1950s. But yet, at the same time, those very same storms that really ratcheted up coastal preparation and mandated more effective evacuation planning was only driven by the fact that there was also massive inland flooding from those storms, but we never exerted the same effort to deal with the inland flooding. We tend to forget it as storms approach, and all the cameras and all the media are focused on the coast, and as most of our efforts are, and those areas deserve attention, but we also need to think inland.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about where you are there in Baton Rouge, facing floods of many different types. I mean, you can get the inundation from tropical activity. At the same time, you're right there along the Mississippi River that has a well-chronicled history of flooding itself from in the interior of the United States.
Yeah, we are largely protected from river flooding here, at least from the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
But 2 years ago, we had massive flooding on a small river, the Amite River.
Mm-hmm.
That did tremendous damage to the city and to the adjacent parishes, much like they're seeing now in Florida, and much like they saw from Harvey in Houston. Houston had a hurricane that just sat in place, 60 inches of rain in some places. We had about 30 from our storms in 2016, and they had comparable levels over in North Carolina this past week. So huge dumps of rainfall produce long-lasting floods, and like you said, they're still seeing crests today in some of the coastal cities like Wilmington in North Carolina.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and if I've linked through your story so people can look at some of the graphics here that I think are fantastic, and you point out, too, looking at the southeast and the different topography around the southeast, it's one issue what y'all will deal with there in Louisiana, kind of similar to us in southwest Alabama, although we have a little more gradient here. But then you look at areas like the Carolinas, not only they have the inundation from the storm and the rain that falls, but it's got a little bit of a running start. They have some elevation and water to run off.
Yeah, they've got all across the South, from Virginia to Louisiana, there's a very dense network of these small rivers that might flow fairly rapidly as they come down the Piedmont or the upland areas, but then they slow down when they get towards the coast, and that really aggravates flooding. We tend to forget about, you know, when people evacuate from the coast, where they go. They go to Baton Rouge. They go inland to Montgomery. They go upstream to places like Fayetteville, North Carolina. Sometimes now we're seeing evacuation centers get flooded. The routes to and from those evacuation centers get flooded. There's still interstates underwater in North Carolina, I understand. Plus, you have the direct property damage. Now you have pollution from the pig farms and the cattle ranches, or the chicken ranches, and that creates all kinds of additional problems, and it really decreases mobility when those roads get flooded.
So what do you do here? You know, as you, what you're laying out here in your story is absolutely, even with, you know, somebody that's a casual observer like me, I'm going, yep, what the doctor says here. But I mean, what do you do? We're talking about tens of millions of Americans living in these areas.
And we've seen an increasing concentration of people in coastal and parishes and counties adjacent to coastal parishes and counties in the last 20, 30 years. So we're seeing much greater population, and that's part of the problem, is we see greater and greater development in these coastal areas, which puts more and more people at risk. So sensible solutions to this are to how do we go about both planning evacuation and sheltering of coastal people in areas that are not going to get flooded. We need to put them in places, in schools and shelters far enough inland and in places that aren't going to be isolated by flooding. When they do evacuate, and then have open access to supplies, you know, more water, more food and whatnot for people who've evacuated. And then in terms of flood insurance and issues like this, we put so much emphasis on rebuilding in place with the flood insurance program that we tend to put people back in harm's way. We encourage people to go back in harm's way. And I think if we can revamp the flood insurance program to encourage people to relocate to safer areas, that makes much more sense. And then in terms of the cost of flood insurance, if we expand the area where flood insurance is mandated from the 100-year floodplain, which is fairly small, to the 500-year floodplain, you could reduce the cost for everybody because you'd have a bigger pool of people, and the flood insurance program wouldn't be teetering on the edge of bankruptcy every time there's a flood.
Yeah, and I can only imagine what the story is going to be here in the aftermath of Florence on this. But you mentioned this from the 100-year flood area and the red line to the 500-year flood. I mean, that does encompass a lot more people. And I would have told you 10, 15 years ago, I'd say, well, you know, that listen, I mean, we shouldn't be insuring things that happen, you know, maybe once every 1,000 years, Dr. Colton. Let's just stick with what we... But how many times in the news the last couple of years have we talked about something as a 500-year flood?
Well, and that's a big shortcoming with that whole system. It tends to lead to the conclusion that a 100-year flood occurs once every 100 years. But in fact, a 100-year flood is simply a measure of probability. That is, it has a 1% chance of happening every year, each and every year. A 500-year flood has a 0.2% chance of happening each and every year. And we don't have a long track record of flood stages. We don't have a 500-year record of river flooding.
So how is that? I'll tell you what, we're up against the break. Can you hold on for a second? We go to the news break, because I want you to help us understand how that's even estimated.
Sure.
All right, coming right back, and I want y'all to read through this story, and the graphics are fantastic, from Dr. Craig Colton from LSU, professor of geography there. The story, rivers flood regularly during hurricanes, but get less attention than coastlines. Read up, and we'll come back to the discussion next, right here on Midday Mobile.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
118 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Monday, continuing our conversation. I want you, and I do want you to read the link story over my Twitter feed from Dr. Colton here. Rivers flood regularly during hurricanes but get less attention than coastline. Author Dr. Craig Colton from LSU talking with us about this. When we went to the break, we're talking about the 100-year and 500-year flood map. And you said it's breaking it down. Once again, it doesn't mean that it only happens once every 100 years. It means what?
Well, a 100-year flood is shorthand for a flood that has a 1% chance of happening every year. It's a measure of probability, not frequency. And the 500-year floodplain is one that has a fifth of that chance of happening each and every year, or 0.2% chance each and every year.
Would that be retooled? I mean, if you saw a situation where an area, let's say the inundation happened, you know, I don't know, 5 out of 18 years or something like that, would you go back and say, well, that probability, I know we said it's, you know, it's 0.2%, 0.20% or 0.5%, depending on which one, but we need to increase that because obviously things have changed.
Yeah, well, those sort of calculations are constantly being folded in, but we don't update those records as frequently as we should. The USGS keeps tabs on flood stages and river data, but we don't really remap the floodplains with the frequency that we are able to now, given all the computer mapping capabilities that we have. And that would be a big step forward. We need to keep these maps up to date so that people can gauge the risk at any and every given location. Plus, we tend to think of floods as, you know, the record for a single basin. But the fact that Houston had 60 inches last year, that means any place between Pensacola and Houston could have a rainfall of 60 inches. So we need to begin thinking regionally and not basin-wide to really get a better sense for what is possible in any given basin along the Gulf Coast.
So you were mentioning a little bit about insurance on those homes in floodplains, because what do we do to make sure people have all the information? I would like people to know what they're getting into, but also, you know, if people want to build in these floodplains, because, I mean, look at it. Look where, you know, we live here in the Southeast. We dealt with the coast issue. We've talked about that. We're talking about inland now. But if they're not on the coast, people love to live along the bayous, along the rivers, right, along the water. I mean, that's one
Absolutely.
Of the allures of living here.
Many, many people really, really, really seek out those kind of locations. And you know, in some respects, that's not fatalistic. But we need to think about, you know, what the costs are to the larger society when many people live in those areas, when you have whole giant subdivisions platted in areas that have higher than normal risk. That unleashes the burden on society at large with flood relief. And that's where flood insurance should provide a better means, where the people who decide to take the risk are responsible for paying for their fair share of taking that risk.
Yeah, I think about the areas that could be affected. I'm thinking about where you are in Louisiana, and here, you know, it's easy for me to just focus on, you know, properties that are more expensive, that are along the waterfront. But heck, in places like where you are and where we are, and many places in between the Gulf Coast, there's a lot of communities that are not, you know, that are not very expensive houses that definitely are affected by these inland flooding issues.
Yeah. And many of the homes that were really seriously damaged over here in 2016 are really, really, you know, rock-solid middle-class type homeowners, not people who have a lot of money and not people who can really afford to self-insure. So they were moving out of Baton Rouge into areas a little bit closer to this river basin and to find real estate they could afford. And yet, without adequate planning and without adequate guidance from governing bodies, they've allowed development in these areas. So people who are underinformed buy into these areas, and mm-hmm. they're the ones who are getting sucked again and again by the cost of flooding.
So have you run the numbers? Could we? I mean, is it over time? The better value for the American taxpayer to get people out of these areas, or is it better to do like what y'all look at right there on the Mississippi River, put giant levees around everything?
Well, you know, back in the 50s, there was actually a discussion of putting giant barriers all along the coast. It was decided that was not sensible. And so they decided to take more of a land use approach, and the Corps of Engineers recommended zoning, land use planning. That ultimately is the cheaper approach. And even with using flood insurance money, a program we already have in place, if you use that money to help people relocate to safer locations, ultimately you can reduce risk across the South. But until we begin to fold in relocation as part of the cost of rebuilding from floods, we're not going to see people moving to safer locations.
And that has to be, I mean, I imagine that has to be a coordinated effort. I mean, you have to have the states on board, you have to have the feds on board.
And it all starts with the National Flood Insurance Program, but that requires buy-in. It requires buy-in from the congressional delegations across the South, which hasn't... There's still too much controversy about what direction to take with the flood insurance program.
Well, I mean, we're looking at a situation where I've got a story, Dr. Colton, all the time that it's teetering, right? I mean, it can't afford itself. We're just one storm away from a collapse.
Oh, absolutely, and it's in dire financial shape. From Maria and Harvey last year, for example, and it's until we begin to expand the pool of people paying. We're still at around 20% of the people who are really at flood risk have flood insurance. We're way below where we should be in terms of people buying insurance. But we have to get the numbers up. And we have to expand the pool to bring the prices down for everybody.
Yeah, and that's where you mentioned that the 500-year flood line,
yeah.
Right? So your idea would be to bring more participants in because we're looking at a situation where it's not out of the realm of possibility they're going to be affected, and have them in the number of people paying into this flood insurance.
Yes. It's a commonsensical sort of approach, but it's a hard thing to sell because many legislatures don't want to see their constituents having to buy flood insurance.
There it is. Well, interesting discussion, and I think it's going to be one that going forward here, as we're watching the aftermath and the trying people getting their lives back together, trying to in the Carolinas, that this NFIP discussion will come back up. And I just want people to be able to get in, make sure we have this conversation, not just on the coast, but inland as well. Dr. Colton, thank you for what you did here, your story, and the information you put out, and hopefully we'll have you back on soon.
Thank you for your interest.
All right. Dr. Craig Colton from LSU. And it is maybe a bigger question. Yeah, I know people are like, oh, well, that's not a... This is the thing. Like, right now, you'll be like, I don't care about that, right? Next time there's a storm and there's flooding in our area and there's a big discussion about, well, NFIP kick in and, you know, who's getting what and who's not getting... Then you care. These are things... This is the problem. Just like... I'll often say we need to have that discussion, but not right now when it's at the a fevered pitch in a political discussion. That's why you need to have these discussions when you're not picking up the pieces from a flood right here at home. So get the full story, linked it up on the Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5.